Thanks for tuning in to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Since 2015, Dr. Youngblood has taken scores of questions and comments on the challenging issues of the day with the goal of informing and motivating listeners to examine the issues from a central biblicist worldview. Currently, this broadcast is heard on 5 regional stations, as well as 4 additional stations in Virginia. There's now a great opportunity to expand this vital ministry to other cities. We sincerely need your help to accomplish this mission. Your support of any amount is needed to take this next step in sharing God's truth in a relevant, lively, and timely way. Thanks for your willingness to support us in this broadcast as we prepare to face the issues on a broader scale.
Go to fcbcatjax.com and click the donate button or send your best gift to First Conservative Baptist Church, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, 32258. Attention radio. Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Congressman Mike Hill today. Congressman Hill is the former House of Representatives member for District 1 in the state of Florida. We're thankful to have him with us today. We're talking about a variety of issues, all of which dovetail into the question, how should we then live, as Ezekiel said in Ezekiel 33:10. Based on what we're seeing, what we're hearing, what is taking place out of the Oval Office, what's happening in Ukraine, what's taking place with the price of goods and services in America, the question is, where are we going with all of that? Congressman Hill, thank you so much again for being with us today. As we think about what is taking place, let's go back to an issue of 2020. They're still doing some major investigations in Arizona and Georgia, and I believe in 2 or 3 other states. But recently, some findings from the investigation and the suits that have been filed, cross suits, et cetera, in the state of Georgia, some of the findings that have come to light about the Dominion software and the Dominion hardware equipment. And now I find it fascinating, and yet at the same time interesting, that Joe Biden, the President of the United States, through the DOJ, is now trying to get the courts, pleading with the courts, to keep the records sealed and not let America know what really took place in the 2020 election. Are you familiar with that happening?
Yes, I am, Dr. Youngblood, and is nothing more than an observance of how corrupt this administration is. If there was no fraud, if there was nothing illegal done, why on earth would you not want it to just come to light instead of trying to hide it through court order? And let's hope, because we never know with our judicial system nowadays, Dr. Youngblood, if it will be make the right decisions of justice or if they'll make political decisions.
That's right.
Let's hope that the judicial system that will not allow them to seal this. We are a free nation, and part of that freedom is to be able to have access of knowing what our government is doing at all times. The government is there to serve us, we the people. It's not we the people serving them. So hopefully they will rule that we have access to be able to see that information, of which I believe everyone already knows will show rampant corruption, election fraud, and not only theft of the presidential election, but a number of those on the down ballots also were victims of election fraud.
Absolutely. In fact, I'm looking at an additional article, Congressman. It says, confirmed 200,000 ballots from 2020 counted with mismatched signatures. Dateline February the 28th, Maricopa County, Arizona. Officials admitted after the 2020 election that there were more than 25,000 ballots counted that mismatched signatures that weren't reviewed or, in the language of the election industry, not cured yet. Actually, the number was much more than 200,000. The study of signatures verification processes is just one of the outcomes of the 2020 presidential election ballot count that now is mired in multiple scandals. What is known is that several individuals' influences probably changed the outcome, including the collusion by the legacy and social media organizations to suppress accurate and damaging information about the Biden's family overseas business profits. A subsequent survey of the Media Research Center revealed that the information has been disseminated. Enough voters would have held their support for Joe Biden and would have lost the election. Secondly, multiple state and local officials simply ignored or violated state laws regulating mail-in ballots to accommodate the COVID-19 pandemic. And it goes on to talk about the fact that Mark Zuckerberg gave $420 million through a couple of foundations to the local election officials, mostly with clear instructions to recruit voters from the Democratic districts. A later report on this activity said that the move likely bought the election of Biden, and those actions which fell outside the ordinary election funding regulations are now being called illegal in multiple states. In fact, headline news on WorldNet Daily this morning, online news, said that they have now been able to gather enough factual information that Zuckerberg actually influenced the election by fraud, coercion, and bribery of those that were in charge. And, of course, you and I have talked about it a number of times on the air and otherwise. I personally believe that prior to the 2024 election, it will already be full knowledge that the election was stolen. But, Congressman Hill, one of the things that's distressing to me is that if we believe the election was stolen, it was fraudulent. If we believe that parents have the right to stand before the school board and challenge the school board members, if question the vaccine or the question the efficacy of the vaccine or question whether or not masks are legitimate, then we are considered domestic terrorists by the Biden administration through the behest of the DOJ going with a 32-page document that's gone to the FBI. What are your thoughts about those issues, and how should we respond to it as citizens? Most people are not aware of these facts because they've been sequestered away from the general public. What should we think? How should we respond?
Well, the most distressing thing to me about all of this, Dr. Youngblood, is that there is no one being held accountable for this election fraud that we saw taking place. And we know that it was, as you say, it was out of Maricopa County, they said 25,000 hadn't been able to match signatures. One is election fraud. So they admitted 25,000 when there was actually 200,000.
Yes.
Well, someone needs to be held accountable for that. That supervisor of election, his office. Why is no one being held accountable? Why aren't charges being brought against someone? Why aren't they placed on trial and brought to justice? That is what I don't understand. And it's not only in Arizona. We're seeing it in Michigan, in Georgia, in Philadelphia, and it is also in Florida, Dr. Youngblood. I had the pleasure of being at a conference just a few weekends ago, and Dr. Douglas Frank was there, a brilliant engineer who developed an algorithm where he was able to go in and test the efficiency and the efficacy of these Dominion voting machines. And he found not only in every state, but almost in every county in every state that there was fraud that was involved. And we have some of our elected officials in Florida, including our governor, saying this was the fairest, cleanest election that we've had whenever, and that Florida did it right. No, there was fraud in Florida also. I mean, you might want to believe that, but the data, the results show us something different. President Trump won Florida, they say, by 3%. I believe it was much larger than that because of the fraud that had taken place. So what we have to do is start holding people accountable. It doesn't do us any good to detect the fraud, to prove there was fraud, and then not having anyone being held accountable for that.
That is so correct. And by the way, we're touching on Florida and the governor's office. Many of our listeners may or may not be aware that the governor went ahead and signed Senate Bill 7014. Tell our listeners, Congressman Hill, what Senate Bill 7014 does, what it will do, and why it was so egregious.
Yes, he signed that into law last Thursday. It was on the very last day where he could either veto that bill, do nothing, and it become law, or sign it, and it becomes law. Well, he decided to sign it. And what that bill did was it extended for another year immunity protection for those in the healthcare industry against lawsuits, hospitals, assisted living facilities, long-term care facilities, to prevent them from being sued because of COVID-19. So that was first put in place in 2021. A Republican-led House and Senate passed that measure, and it was extended just last week for another year, providing protection from them being sued. Now, they actually can be sued, but the burden of proof is now at a much higher level where it has to include gross negligence or malicious intent. That is a much harder thing to prove when somebody who is in the hospital, given medication which we know and they know will kill them, such as remdesivir, and put them on a ventilator, which is another death sentence, that they can continue to do that and not be sued by the patient's families.
That's egregious. And very frankly, I understand from several Christian attorneys in the state of Florida that helped fight that. They were accused, of course, and all of the attorneys were accused of wanting that bill to not be signed because they wanted to be able to file suit against hospitals. But Jeff Childers, right there in Gainesville, Jeff said that's not the case at all. He's concerned about people being killed as a result of the hospital medical practices that's following the CDC protocol and not having any recourse in the courts. I know our son, 56 years old, that was tortured to death in the hospitals in Virginia, 71 days. And I've read there the same type bill, which is a blanket immunity bill. And I am absolutely aggrieved by the fact that we have 29 states that have that kind of, has that kind of law today that allows the hospitals and doctors to treat a patient any way they like and torture the patient to death. By the way, Congressman, I was shocked, to say the least. I'm familiar with the fact that all of this COVID CDC protocol for the doctors and the hospitals is M-O-N-E-Y, gravy train. But I must tell our listeners, I was shocked to discover that when a hospital puts the ventilator in a patient, the CDC CARES Act funds provides $300,000 to that hospital. $300,000 just for putting the ventilator in the patient. And the ventilator is good for about 14 days, and then it will deteriorate, cause to be deteriorated all the organs in the body. And yet, in my conversation with three of our Republican representatives and one of our Republican senators, they said, Dr. Youngblood, we need to have that law because if we don't, hospitals can go bankrupt, become insolvent because of the suits against them. And my statement was, if they're treating the patient to heal the patient and cure the patient, why should they be afraid of that? But what they're doing is it literally killing the patient. I'm looking at a large article that says, COVID cartel lied and people died. But now it is said to be all the patient's fault. I find it egregious that we have that kind of legislation, and I'm saddened that our governor signed it. But there is a bill, Congressman, that I want to switch to and talk about that's on the fast track, as I understand it. It's Senate Bill 988. Are you familiar with Senate Bill 988?
Not by that number, Dr. Youngblood. What does that bill do?
It's the giving the patients the right to have family members come in and visit and see them, et cetera, et cetera?
I'm only vaguely familiar with that, but it sounds like it's a good bill. That it is crazy that having a loved one in a hospital, that you're not able to go in there, visit them, give them comfort, which emotionally and mentally and physically will strengthen them. That protocol that hospitals have right now is ineffective and should be removed.
It's inhumane and it's barbaric. Here's the article that sparks the thought on that. Jacksonville Advocate pushes for the number for No Patient Left Alone Act. Floridians in hospitals, nurses, nursing homes, assisted living facilities would be guaranteed the right to have visitors under legislation nearing the finish line in the Florida legislature. One of the leading advocates pushing the bill is Jacksonville's local Mary Daniel, who garnered national attention early in the pandemic when she was told she couldn't see her husband, who had Alzheimer's. In 2020, Mary was told she couldn't see her husband, Steve, who resides in a local assisted living facility due to COVID protocols. When the days turned into weeks and the weeks turned into months, Mary said, I started to get very vocal. Mary found the only way she could visit her husband was by getting a job at the facility as a dishwasher. Quote, and went to see him right away after my first shift. It had been 114 days since I had hugged him, said Mary, but something still didn't feel right. If I can touch him as a dishwasher, why can't I touch him as my wife, Mary said. Mary helped advocate for the opening of nursing homes and ALFs throughout the pandemic. She's now advocating for legislation that would help ensure no one else will have to be separated from their loved ones due to the public health protocol. The bill is called No Patient Left Alone Act, is moving through the chambers of the Florida legislature and requires hospitals, nursing homes, ALFs to allow the visitation with physical touch so long as the visitors adhere to the same health precautions as the staff. Quote, so many residents literally died alone, family members watching them die through the windows. We have to be sure that doesn't happen again, this article writer says. Well, Congressman, here's my point. I've talked with Senator Bean on that. I've talked with Representative Yarber. I've talked with Representative Sabatini. I've talked with Representative Jason Fisher on this particular bill and also on Senate Bill 7014 that the governor signed. But it's my position that if they're following the CDC protocol and they're saying you can't come in, and yet the doctor can see the patient, the nurse can see the patient by putting on the CDC protocol as far as the PPP and the mask, if a mask will help them protect them, why can't it protect me? If the protocol will help protect them, why can't it protect me if I want to see a loved one in the hospital? First time in my multiple years in ministry that I've not been allowed to go in to visit with a patient with any disease whatsoever. And it's the barbaric, it's inhumane, and I'm thankful that I've had the privilege, Congressman, of helping to rewrite a portion of that bill. If they will take our rewritten form rather than what came out of bill drafting, I think you make a vast difference in what takes place. This bill, by the way, must have teeth in it that says the hospitals and the doctors must adhere to it, or else there's a penalty or a fine. What are your thoughts in relationship to opening the doors? In fact, right now, as I told Senator Bean just 2 weeks ago, I said we have more security guards in our hospitals today than we have in most of the prisons where you're simply disavowed to see a family member. It's the first time in the history of medical care that that's been the case. What are your thoughts? How should we respond? What are your recommendations? Because I think that we need to continue to call our representatives, our senators, et cetera, and urge them to put teeth in Senate Bill 988. Tell us your thoughts and position on that.
Absolutely, Dr. Youngblood. You're correct, and I admire you for getting involved and adding language that does put teeth into it to allow fines and penalties for facilities, hospitals that violate that law. I'm glad to hear that it's being fast-tracked and it's moving. Session is coming to an end here real soon, so it has to be done. So I'm glad that it is being done, and it has to be done. I would encourage your listeners to call your state rep and your state senator and tell them to vote yes on this very important bill. I have a member of my church who was telling me at one of our Wednesday night meetings that first his wife contracted COVID, was admitted into the hospital, and then about 3 days later, he was diagnosed with it, was also admitted into the hospital. Their rooms were adjacent to each other, right next door, and they were still not allowed to see each other. That's just insane. That doesn't even make sense. You both have COVID or diagnosed with having COVID. You're both right next to each other, and you couldn't see each other. That doesn't make sense at all. So I hope that this law does get passed quickly and that the governor will sign it quickly, that he won't let it just sit on his desk until the last minute, that it will get signed quickly, and that people will be able to go into the hospitals to see their loved ones again. Even in light of the fact, Dr. Youngblood, that even the CDC is beginning to admit that the efficacy of wearing masks is not necessary, is waning, and
yes,
that we see a number of areas, even Democrat-controlled areas and states, are now removing all the mandates and so forth that are in place, that you must have the vaccination or wear masks to go into restaurants, businesses, and so forth. They're all removing that because it never should have been in place in the first place, Dr. Youngblood. So let's hope that this bill, and if you will give the audience that bill number again, it was Senate Bill, was it 988, you said, Dr. Youngblood?
Senate Bill 988, that's correct.
988. Call your state representative, call your state senator, and tell them to vote yes for this. What's amazing to me, Dr. Youngblood, is that they will vote yes for this, but they all, everyone who you named, also voted yes to give those immunity protections
yes.
to those hospitals and facilities which were murdering people.
Well, my conversation with Clay Yarber, Representative Yarber, and this is not to diss Clay, but in my conversation with him, he was the full opinion based on what the governor had said and based on what others had said in conference meetings on that subject, that the hospitals would go bankrupt if they didn't have that bill passed. I read him some statistical data from Ascension Hospitals across the nation, and Ascension, as a result of that immunity bill and as a result of what they're being paid by the CARES Act because of COVID, Ascension had a $1.9 billion increase in profits just in 1 year, 2020 through 2021, a 353% increase in profits, with a net of some $9 billion that was net profits that was not touched by anything simply because of what they were being paid. And they get a 20% bonus above the total hospital bill, notwithstanding what the insurance companies pay. So the hospitals and the physicians are coming out like bandits as a result of this immunity bill and what they're allowed to do, and shutting the patients' families and friends and relatives and pastors and priests out of the hospital so that they'll not be able to speak to the loved ones is totally egregious. But Congressman, we've got just a few minutes left. I'm looking at an article that says double vaccinated 20-year-old model suffers heart attack and both legs had to be amputated. That happened just recently now down in Tampa. The article says how many innocent people need to suffer before they awaken to the reality of the horrors that they are taking, that's taking place today. The mainstream media once again proves the point when they attempt to cover for big pharma and big government conspirators. Here is the next innocent victim that has fallen into their genocidal trap. A previous healthy model from Florida has been in the hospital fighting for her life after suffering a heart attack earlier this month. She's 20 years old, and it goes in. She was admitted to the Tampa General Hospital January the 16th with severe leg pain and was diagnosed with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different heart malfunctions and ailments. A few hours after being admitted, her heart stopped. 2 weeks ago, Claire's heart rapidly deteriorated when her heart and other organs were impacted. She was quickly put in ICU for life support. Her father, Wayne, said about the ordeal, "She has been through so much of this. The last 2 weeks felt like 2 months." He goes on to talk about the fact that her heart had stopped. They had to put her on all kinds of life-saving equipment, and because her legs were swollen, not allowing the flow of the blood, they had to amputate both legs as a result of the COVID vaccination. Congressman, we've got just a few minutes. Speak to the issue of the dangers of the COVID vaccination. And now Matt Staver with Liberty Counsel has said that over 400,000 have already died because of the COVID vaccination, and over 1.25 million have been impotent and or sterilized and or harmed for the rest of their lives, medically speaking. What are your thoughts on that?
It's a tragedy, Dr. Youngblood. Max Staver, a friend of mine, I believe those numbers, and I believe those numbers might actually be low.
Yes.
Over 400,000 deaths have taken place, not because of COVID, but because of the vaccine, the COVID
yes.
vaccine, which really isn't a vaccine at all, as has been defined in the past to prevent the disease from spreading. It hasn't done that at all. In fact, people who have been double vaccinated and even boosted a third shot are still coming down with COVID. And then the side effects have been horrendous. We're seeing it in our military. We're seeing it with healthy young people, those in sports and younger. And now we have Pfizer still pressing the fact that they want to give it to children as young as 5 years old, 5 to 12 years old, who don't even get a negative effect by COVID. It is insane. And now we hear this Fauci fraud, which I'm so glad more and more people are onto him and are not listening to him, is saying that they might have to have an annual Pfizer vaccine, just like the flu shot, which is insane because we have seen all these side effects and what it is doing to people of all ages.
That is so well said, and I'm concerned about it. Let's end on a final note in relationship to what's taking place in Ukraine. I'm looking at two articles. I'm going to speak to the articles and then ask you to close out with that thought. One article says, we need more Bibles. The Ukrainian store runs out of Bibles as people encounter scripture for the first time ever amid the Russian crisis. Another article said, the Ukrainian seminary in Lviv becomes refugee shelter, helps hundreds, and the president of the college there says, we need a miracle from God. Speak to that. They're the people in a scramble to save their lives, and they're turning to God, looking to the Bible, and yet they're running out of Bibles. And how should we respond as Christians? Should we continue to pray for them? What is the hope that we have for the Christians and for the Jewish people and for the civilians in Ukraine?
Dr. Youngblood, the Church of the Lord God Almighty cannot be stopped.
That's right.
It will not be stopped. And despite these tragedies that we see going on, we all can see, and the people in Ukraine and around the world can see that the answer is the gospel. It's
yes.
turning to the living God. I lift up my eyes to the hills. Where does my help come from? My help comes from God, the maker of heaven and earth. And these people are seeing it in desperation. They are crying out and they need Bibles. If your listeners are know of some way where they can contribute to an organization which will distribute Bibles there, that is a worthy cause. Get them the Word of God. It gives them hope. It brings them their salvation. And that is that's the ultimate desire of.
Yes. Thank you so much, Congressman Hill. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us today. Looking forward to meeting you next time on the air as once again we face the issues.
This program can be heard in its entirety 9 p.m. on 100.3 FM and 93.3 HD3. You're also invited to tune in Sunday mornings at 8 a.m. on Talk 100.3 for expository preaching. Tune in and invite others to listen.